Thank you. Well, I will call this Monday, September 24th, 2012 Planning Commission meeting to order. If you could do the roll for us, Kim.
Chairman Lutz.
I'm here.
Commissioner Demarest.
Here.
Commissioner Dirksen.
Here.
Commissioner Christensen.
Here.
Commissioner Roblin.
Here.
Commissioner Sherwood.
Here.
Commissioner Tuttle.
Here.
Thank you. And this is the time of our meeting where we take comments from the citizens on any item that is not on tonight's agenda. We will be addressing those later this evening. Is there anyone wanting to make any comments to the Planning Commission on an item not on tonight's agenda? Seeing no hand, we will move on. We have no minutes to approve. We have our workshops. Our first one is the 2013 Comprehensive Plan Update. Brad, I believe you'll be taking this. Is that right?
Yes.
Thank you. I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you, Commissioner Lutz. This is a discussion item only for the Planning Commission tonight. There'll be various public hearings coming up in the future on the various items. There were four proposals for comprehensive plan amendments brought to the City Council this year, and they are the comprehensive plan text amendments, which is CPA 2013A, City Gateway District, CPA 13B, the System Plan Updates, which is CPA 2013C, and School Mitigation Fees, which is CPA 2013D. We will have a more in-depth discussion on the second item on your agenda tonight for the school mitigation fees themselves. The comprehensive plan text amendments are basically working on updating the comprehensive plan to make everything sort of work together a little bit better. Amendments have been made over time that haven't looked at the entire comprehensive plan, and so there's been some inconsistencies that have worked itself into the code. There's also some other things like the description of the Monroe, the city of Monroe, and the environs of Monroe are different in all the different plans and in the comprehensive plan, like the water plan, the sewer plan, the transportation plan. So we want to get all those as the same, so that all the people who are looking at things are working on the same basic assumptions. Update the tables that are in the comprehensive plans to reflect the 2010 census data, since everything is over 10 years old, because it's all referring to the things that came out of the 2000 census. So we want to update those so we know what's actually happening in Monroe. The vision statement, this in the beginning of the comprehensive plan, talks about changing and reshaping Monroe and maintaining the character of Monroe, which is, there's a tension there. So how do you keep something the same and change it? So which direction you want to go and how much to change, how much to keep the same. Remove land use regulations that belong in the Monroe Municipal Code, like in the comprehensive plan. Comprehensive plan is policy. The regulations themselves belong in the municipal code. The big one for that right now is the airport overlay zone. The maps of the overlay zones are actually included in the comprehensive plan. There's a lot of things that have been accomplished by the city that are still in there under the action items of things to do, like adopt critical area regulations. We've done that. So those things need to be updated. So that's the overview of the comprehensive plan text amendments. And if anybody has any questions or thoughts, you want to do them in between each one so they don't have to wait so long?
Yeah.
Okay.
Any questions or comments on that? Jeff?
What is the status of all of these updates? Are they in process?
The City Council just gave us the go-ahead to do this last Tuesday, so we're in the midst of starting those things. And the schedule for the text amendments is to have a recommendation from the Council for the Planning Commission on January 14th.
Any other questions or comments, Commissioners?
CPA 2013B, which is the City Gateway Districts. In the 2012 Comprehensive Plan docket, there was the West Monroe amendments that we were talking about in conjunction with the airport changes. But due to staffing limitations, we only got the airport done and basically passed on the West Monroe area, which was kind of concentrating around the block plant at the north end of Lake Tide. So we decided that to kind of expand that one to include all the gateways to Monroe and to see what kind of thing would be welcoming to Monroe at the three gateways to Monroe that's included on your in your packet in the little map there. So it would be the northwest, southwest, and the east, and the south gateway, which is at the south end of Lewis Street. So what kind of zoning overlay districts, design standards, or just have gateway signs, whatever would work out of that. And that is, we figured that one would take the longest, and that would be having a recommendation from the Planning Commission on May 13th. The system plan updates, which is, any questions about that?
Commissioner, any questions or comments, something?
Okay. CPA 2013C, which is the system plan updates, is the periodic updates that we make to the water system plan, the sewer system plan, the stormwater system plan, and some minor transportation plan elements. Basically, just to bring those up to date, but there's lots of tables of current usage and length of pipes and things like that which are included in those. So just to bring those up to date, since it's been about 2 years since we did that. Just so those keep current, so when they're due by the state, they're not such a big project that we have to go back and collect data from a long time ago. Any questions about that?
Jeff? Perhaps corollary is the buildable lands report get integrated into the comprehensive plan?
Yes.
And is that yet available?
No. The, so which one's first? Very soon, we're supposed to be, I forget which one it is, there's one that's basically fourth quarter of 2012 and then first quarter of 2013. It's basically a two-step process. I think they come up with the buildable lands first, should be the fourth quarter of 2012, and then first quarter of 2013, they should give the, digging out the 2035 population and employment forecasts. So that's what Paul's been going to those meetings with the county combined group, and that's what they're working on right now. So that won't be included in these updates, and that will be included in the 2015 rewrite of the comprehensive plan.
Commissioners, any other questions or comments? Thank you.
Okay. And then CPA 2013 D, I'm going to skip until the next one, since that's the next item on the agenda. And if anybody has any, the system plan updates, we're hoping to bring to the council for a resolution with the council on the commission on January 28th of next year.
Well, thank you.
And I don't think there's any other questions on the schedule. Any questions or comments? If not, then we'll move on to the next workshop, which is the CPA 2013 D. School litigation fees.
Okay.
Brad, I'm assuming you'll take that one?
Yes. Right. With some comments from Jeff Sachs, our economic development manager. The city's been collecting school litigation fees since early to mid-90s. And in this, basically, they're based on the capital facilities plan that comes from the school districts. And when we first started those fees, there was only one school district, which was the Monroe School District. And when we annexed the Roosevelt Road area, we actually included that in Snohomish School District. So since that annexation, which I think was 2008, we've had both school districts in our comprehensive plan. There's multiple things happening with school mitigation fees right now. One is the discount rate. Initially, everyone did 50%, both Snohomish County and the City of Monroe, for the Monroe School District. In 2002, the Monroe School District recommended 50% discount in their capital facilities plan. That went to the Planning Commission. They recommended to the City Council to accept the 50% reduction rate or discount rate. The City Council at that time decided only to do a 25% discount rate. And then in 2008, that got incorporated into, I think it was 2007, sorry, 2007, that got incorporated into the comprehensive plan. The first step of this process right now is to remove that 25% discount policy from the comprehensive plan and give that back to the city council to determine, as comprehensive facility plans come from the council, from the school district, what fee they want to charge. The things you have in front of you, then with all the red on the front page, is the proposed amendments to the capital facilities element regarding schools from the comprehensive plan, and then the last couple of pages is actually probably most of the pages are the changes to the goals, policies, and actions that are related to the school of fees. That's the first step, is to remove that. The second step is that also that we're going to adopt the 2012 to 2017 capital facilities plans, which are in the packet that was sent to you by email or by paper. Those of you who get paper copies, they're the big, thick documents, for both the Monroe School District and the Snohomish School District. Adopting that now will allow us to get on the same schedule as the county is, adopting these school mitigation fees changes and the capital facilities plans, is because this county adopts theirs effective the January 1st after the plans come out. Right, and that's actually what is required by our Monroe Municipal Code, that we're supposed to be on the same schedule as the county. Right now, the county adopts theirs January, and we usually end up getting ours somewhere between July and November. So there's that disparity on how much people are being charged for school mitigation fees in that period, whether or not you're in the city or out in the unincorporated Snohomish County. The third piece of it is to change the school impact mitigation fee program, which is codified in Monroe Municipal Code Chapter 20.07, which was passed out to you today. And then the fourth phase would be to change the fees resolution to reflect whatever fees that the city council decides to implement for school mitigation fees in both districts. Any questions?
Yeah, I got that one real quick. The schedule for this, since we didn't talk about it in the last, we talked about the docket. What kind of schedule are we looking at for these three phases?
The school fees. We're looking at having a recommendation from the Planning Commission on October 15th of this year, and then the city council would adopt the comprehensive plan changes in conjunction with the 2013 budget on December 4th, because that allowed, by doing it, capital facilities plans are allowed to be changed out of their cycle, so to speak, since we've already did 2012 once, when it's related to a budget amendment. So That's the plan right now for doing that. And then shortly thereafter, the change to the Monroe Municipal Code and the fees resolution would be in front of the council for approval also.
And that would not come through the Planning Commission? That just goes straight to the council?
No.
Oh, so it would go to the council?
All three of the things are here with you. Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay.
Commissioners, any questions or comments? Dave?
I see that Mr. Evening's and the audience from the school district will be hearing from him this evening. We're going to have a chance to ask questions and comments after that.
Normally, when we're done with our questions of staff, we do open it up to the public.
I don't know that we consider it public, no offense, but.
Well, we do have members of the audience.
What I'm saying is that he's here on behalf of the school district.
Right.
As their representative. And I do have some questions. I would just like to hear the input first.
Gotcha. So you're saying your preference would be, if you have questions, is to get some input from the school district first.
Yes.
Commissioners, any opposition to that?
No.
I have none either. So if you could introduce yourself, if you could give us your name and address for the record, please.
My name is Ralph Ealing. I serve as the director of facilities for Monroe School District. My address is 23719 150th Street Southeast, Monroe, Washington.
Thank you.
I'm here on behalf of the school district because I'm probably the person in the school district most familiar with the plan, and I can speak to the plan and hopefully answer your questions about the plan.
Thank you. So, Dave, do you have any questions specifically?
My question goes to the change from, to make sure I get this correct, the city of Monroe's permit discounts 25%, Snohomish County discounts 50% in the application of the mitigation fees for schools that are applied to the development. Mm-hmm. Right? I'm certainly supportive of the collecting of the dollars for the needs that are imposed upon schools and other infrastructures by new development. But what I'm struggling with a little bit here is all I have to do is step across the line from incorporated city of Monroe to unincorporated Snohomish County, and whether I'm a builder or an end user, a consumer, a buyer of a new house, the cost goes down. And I don't quite get that. It's the same school district. It's just a matter of stepping outside of the city, and I need to try to rationalize that. If I can, if you can help me in that regard, I should appreciate it.
The discount fee is set by the city council. The discount fee was set at 25% by the city council a number of years ago. I cannot presume to know what was in their minds when they did that.
Okay.
I can't tell you why.
Sure. Yeah, I believe I've heard that the discussion is that the city is talking about moving toward an equal discount as what Snohomish County has. Is the school district been supportive or opposed to that?
I can't give you an answer. The school board has had discussion on this matter. I know that they, in their public meeting, expressed significant concerns about the change and sent, I believe it's two letters to the city with a number of questions where they wanted more information to help them understand why the proposal to change the discount fee was before the city. I don't know if you've seen copies of those letters or not.
We had a letter this evening in our back from September 12th.
Yes. Okay, that's the latest letter. And that list at the bottom, a number of questions the school board specifically would like to discuss with the city.
Okay. Thank you.
Jeff? My understanding from our last meeting was that we've only had a handful of building permits in the last few years, and that the total dollars raised from the collection of those impact fees for schools was a very, very small part, I assume, of the school district's total budget. So have you, as the facilities person, seen a significant impact to the district, a negative impact of not having very much collection on total dollars simply because there haven't been that many building permits?
Anytime you receive less money, I believe there's an impact. The general downturn in the economy for everybody has impacted mitigation fees to the Monroe School District, both from the county and from the city. Unfortunately, we haven't been able to do any building because we have not been able to pass a bond issue. Mitigation fees are used only for capital facilities, whether it be land or building or sometimes portables, and can't be used for anything else. We haven't had any of those projects available to us at this point.
How much do you have in that kitty from the impact fees at the present time?
I can't tell you. I don't know. That would go to our budget person, and I can't tell you that.
So if you have a need that was needed, let's say portable, you'd have to go to that person and say, this is big as how much is available and whether or not you could acquire something or rent something.
There would be a process, and whether that would be the exact process, I can't tell you.
Okay.
I'm really here to speak about the plan.
Okay. Thank you.
Dave?
And perhaps Rob, this should be directed to you. We'll be having a public hearing on October 15th.
Sure.
And you, I think you identified four different things that are a part of this process. Removing it from the plan, et cetera, et cetera. Is part of the planning commission's role to make the recommendation on the discount rate or not?
Yes.
Okay. So, will we have some more information with regard to questions on rationale from a member by the 15th or for the 15th?
It's like, sure.
Sure.
The president of the school board did ask some questions, and I think those would be a good place to start. First and foremost, though, is the council in 2002 made a legislative policy decision to establish a 25% discount. When they did that, they embedded it into the comprehensive plan. And it, in essence, took that policy decision away from the council from that point forward. So the 25% over that period of time has gone from a council policy decision that can be acted on annually to being embedded into the school capital facilities plan, and our comprehensive plan just accepts what's in the capital facilities plan for the school district. So this process truly is to extract or decouple legislative policy that rightfully belongs in the city council's hands from the comprehensive plan and to put it back into the legislative body. That way, on an annual basis, or if council choose to, more than annual, can modify the discount as their legislative desires wander whichever direction they may go. So that's the basic premise behind this, is to put the legislative power back where it rightfully belongs. Secondly, there's a question about additional mitigation fees. So in the city of New Rome, there's typically five sets of fees that a builder, developer will pay in order to entitle a new lot and to get a permit for a new house. So you have a transportation mitigation fee, you have a park mitigation fee, school mitigation fee, sewer and water hookup, and then all the review, just the basic permit from the city of Monroe. Monroe is, when we do look at the fee comparison, is typically at the higher end in Snohomish County. We're not the highest, but we're at the higher end. The city staff are currently in the budget this year is $150,000 for consultant study to analyze our transportation improvement plan citywide. And that process will go through a lengthy discussion, and when we get out the other end, we will have a whole brand new list of transportation projects in the city, and that will create whatever that new transportation mitigation fee will be at that time. Could be higher, could be lower. Parks. The capital facilities plan for the parks department is about $58 million. When you look at $58 million in the time frame and go through the magic to calculate the park mitigation fee, we end up with what we have in the current. I've spent a fair amount of time, our parks director has spent a fair amount of time looking at our parks capital facilities plan, and it needs an update. So we will be going through that process also, I would imagine, over the next year, looking at our parks capital facilities plan. One of the things that has happened, and it's not policy yet, but we have our new cable park that's going through the permit process right now. It will pay rent over the next 20 years and about roughly at $1.4 million. So that money, staff is going to recommend that money goes into the parks capital facilities plan. It's a new revenue source. So when you look at $1.4 million going in and setting aside part of that $58 million worth of parks that's unpaid for, that calculation theoretically and practically will reduce park mitigation fees for new homes. In addition to that, there's projects that will be built, and there's projects that are probably unrealistic at this time. A couple of them, the extreme sports park that was originally planned for the old landfill site north of Fred Meyer, $5.8 million. City's going through the process right now of looking at remediating that property and converting it back to commercial land. So one of the big $5.8 million is in the parks plan. That's 10% of the total parks plan. Should it still be in there? Should it be somewhere else in the city? That discussion hasn't taken place. But there's large chunks of planning money inside the parks plan that need to be looked at hard. And again, at the end of that process, fees will either go up or down. So it's not unlike what Ralph has done with the school capital facilities plan. The school district, as Ralph said tonight, I think we agreed that complex was a good description of the exercise the school district has to go through to come up with a capital facilities fee for each new student that comes into the school. So that's what we're talking about here. The school district, by law, calculates what the impact is for one new student into the school district. And the exercise we're going through here is to extract and put back in the legislative body's authority the ability to charge anywhere from 100% of the school district's calculated fee to zero. It could be anywhere in between, and state law and county or city code allows for anywhere in between. Countywide, the city of Mineral is the only municipality that varies from the 50% discount. Every other municipality in Snohomish County is at 50%. Now, if you start looking at the economics of this, what's the current fee? About $4,700 roughly? Now, that $4,700 is the actual collected fee that we collect in the city of Mineral. That's been discounted from about $5,800 already. What we're talking about doing is reducing that by a third. So the reduction would be roughly $1,500 per unit.
Can I jump right over just for a second? That's the current fee that is based on the 2008 to 2013 plan. The current fee, which we're going to do next week at the city council meeting, the current fee based on the 2010 to 2015 plan is $29.84, I do believe, for the city of Mineral. So just so everyone's talking about the same things. And then the proposal for when we adopt the 2012 to 2017 fee, it would actually drop to 1984. So, okay. All right. Everyone knows. So different numbers floating around out there.
So the fact that we haven't had any growth over the last 4 or 5 years to speak of, and enrollment has been fairly stable, somewhat declining in the last few years, but I hear that this year we might be ticking back up a little bit. Because of that, the fee that's calculated in the school capital facilities plan comes down because there's school mitigation fees can only be spent on the impact due to new growth. Can't be spent on current capital programs for current kids in the schools. It's only designed to be spent on new growth. So let's talk about the economics of construction. If a builder has $1 million in his pocket, he can choose to go to Snohomish or Edmonds or Brothel, Lake Stevens, Marysville, wherever he wants to go. And the price of an entry-level home, which is typically what new construction is right now, that price point is pretty well defined in each community. So the builder knows going in what he can sell the house for fairly accurately. What he has to do then is figure out what his costs of construction, cost of land acquisition, and cost of permit and fees are going to be. In the city of Mineral, we tend to be at the higher end. In other communities, there's of the 15 school districts in Snohomish County, 8 school districts charge 0 school mitigation fees. And that's because they've either been successful in passing their bonds and they're fully built out and they have capacity in their school district, or they've made the determination legislatively just not to collect those fees. So that puts those communities at a competitive advantage from the builder's perspective when they come into your community to build new homes. So the rationale in this case is we are coming into an upcycle. Lots are at a shortage in Snohomish County. Permitted, built, and fully entitled lots. I don't think I'm going too far down the rim here, but there's basically zero available. And then Dave and Jeff could argue with me, but I think the capacity right now is very limited for new lots. So what we're getting is the preliminary plats are coming back through the process, and we're re-entitling some of the older plats that have just been lingering. And the builders are bringing new product into the market. And they're looking at the different communities to decide, where do I want to build homes? In the city of Monroe, I think we have 260 lots that are under application, in process, working its way through the city. Those lots won't all get built next year. Some of them will get built in 2014. Some of them will get built in 2015. But what we're looking at is the opportunity for new construction into our community. So new construction does quite a few different things. It brings new people into our community, brings new residents, it increases the overall tax base. The city gets rewarded in a lot of different ways from new construction. We receive real estate excise tax for all the different sales transactions. We receive sales tax for construction of the different homes if the materials are delivered here in the city. And we get new people coming into our community to spend their dollars. The school district doesn't benefit on that upside except for the next time they pass a levy. The money gets spread out over more of a tax base. The assessed value of the city is higher, so the levy rate that each individual property owner is lower. And so there's a slight benefit to the individual taxpayer as a new home comes into the town. So again, what we're discussing here is the fee, number one, set at the right place? And number two, should it be, as I believe it's appropriately position, should it be in the council's hands and not tied up in the comprehensive plan? Additional, let's see, what else is there? Reduced fee in an economic downturn, what mechanism is there for returning the fee to its current level? If we were to drop it to 50%, what mechanism would bring it back to 25%? Simple action by the council. By extracting it, decoupling it at this stage of the game, it's in the legislative arena. If the council, some future council, has a different policy position, they can amend that and modify that discount at a future date. I would have to say that, you know, it says what benefits to the school system of having lower school mitigation fees. Well, there's a negative impact, obviously, if we reduce the fees. There's less revenue to the school district. But at the same time, I believe there's positive impacts too. Depending on whose numbers you look at, 50, 60% of the new homes built will be occupied with families with kids, and those kids will be attending our schools. And so by reducing the fee that comes from that family, we're reducing the opportunity for the school district to have capital funds to build new construction for new facilities for the kids. But at the same time, that new child that's coming into our community to move into this new home is also funded on not on the capital side of the school ledger, but on the operational side, about 60-some percent, 70-some percent from the state. So they will get an additional state allocation on a per capita basis or FTE basis to fund the education of that student, teachers and books and principals and that sort of thing. So there is a benefit there. In addition, we are increasing the overall tax base of our community. We're complying with the requirement that we have under GMA to accommodate new residential capacity. We're about 1,000 dwelling units short of our 2025 population allocation. And during the next comp plan, the big update that we're going to be doing over the next couple of years, our 2035 allocation looks to be we may be as many as 3,500 homes in arrears. So where are we going to put those folks? How are we going to attract builders to our community to build those new dwelling units? And we're not in a situation where we were in 2001, 2002. In 2002, when this took off, the city of Monroe collected $910,000 in school mitigation fees. That's a lot of money. And if we were talking about a third reduction at that time, it would have been $310,000. I mean, that's real money. When we start going forward in time, for the last 4 years, we've averaged about $40,000 in fees collected. So I'm looking at this from the perspective that as we're coming up out of this recession, as the building community is starting to get back on its legs, Monroe has over a 10% unemployment rate. New home construction employs a tremendous number of people, and the construction industry is probably the hardest hit in this area during this recession. And it's an opportunity for new jobs in our community, new homes in our community. And what we're doing is we're going to see a net increase over the last 4 years in real dollars to the school district, albeit it won't be at the higher rate that we've been collecting in the past. So that's just kind of a little bit of my rationale. And we will have more information as time goes along. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. You were very detailed as usual, and I appreciate that because you answered some of my questions I already had, specifically where we stood with other municipalities. That was one thing I was curious about. I do have another question, and it is certainly not rhetorical, but in my mind, and I don't understand the process completely, but as far as property taxes are concerned, the school district gets money from, say, bonds and those kinds of things based on assessed value. Obviously, if the lot is sitting empty, it's a lower assessed value than if there's a home on it. Am I correct in that?
You're correct. What happens is every other, in the city, for instance, new construction will collect more property tax revenue. The school district doesn't have that pleasure. They go out for a fixed dollar figure on their bond levy. So if they go out for $10 million, that's all they're ever going to collect is $10 million. Now, if during that 12 or 20-year period during the bond, we double our assessed value, the taxpayers will see some relief in how much they pay against that $10 million. They'll just pay a smaller portion, and the new construction will pick up the tab on the rest of the construction. So they don't get an upside for the new construction until the next time they go out for another bond, and they'll have a larger tax base to ask to help pay for the fees.
Great, thank you. That is very informative. So it doesn't immediately turn into dollars for them as far as that. It really is helping the property owners, and then at some point there could be a realized benefit because of a broader tax base.
Correct.
Thank you.
Commissioners, any other questions? Jeff?
Has the increase in Monroe's population during this relatively flat construction period been disproportional with the number of new units that have been introduced into the market?
That's a hard question for me to answer. Brad might be able to help me, but I've been here a year. New construction has been malignant for the last 4 years. It just hasn't been happening. Most of the growth that Monroe saw was up through 2008 when the growth stopped. We don't have the demographic data to be able to define it on an annual basis. We're at about 17,000 people right now.
I mean, we can go look what the annually for the Office of Financial Management population estimate. They calculate the number of people per unit. So I think that's what you're getting at, that we increased by 5,000 people, but we only built two new houses. kind of thing, so.
Exactly.
Yeah, and we can get you the data on what the.
The reason I ask this question is if 100 new families move to town and the average goes from 2.4 to 2.7, those folks, if they move into existing housing, don't have any skin in the game.
Correct.
And so therefore, since we're living in apparently a fair society, they're supposed to be today, that's not fair. That all of that burden is being placed on new construction, even though people moving into existing housing stock may increase the burden on the school district. I don't know if that's a real problem or not, but to me, there seems to be a disconnect there in that demographic.
Going through this legislative argument several times at the county level, that's exactly why there is a discount. When people move into a new home, brand new home, where do they come from, number one? Did they upgrade from an apartment in Monroe? Did they move from a little cottage into a bigger house in Monroe? Number two, do they have kids? Don't know the answer to that question. If they come into town and move into a new home, are they bringing children with them, or are they a retired couple or a young couple with no children? We don't know the answer to that question. So the whole discount came about as a compromise, if you will, over new construction. Should new construction bear 100% of the impacts when some reduced number of children are actually going to be moving into those homes? And that's, I think, the basic rationale for the discount.
I'd like to just ask one more thing. I would like to see, I think it would be helpful for us as a group to see the very last building permit that was pulled for new construction of a single-family residence and how much money that builder paid to the city for that privilege. Is that something you could supply to us? Thank you.
Jeff, I may have an answer to your question about the number of students per new home. If that was in fact your question. Each time we write a capital facility plan, we have to go out and do a student generation rate study where we review new homes built within the Monroe School District. We did that for this plan. What we have found is that each single family home is generating 0.615 students coming from the Monroe School District. That's down from 0.66, which is even down from the 0.96 it was when we were in the middle of the boom. Our multiple family homes, two bedroom or more, were generating 0.602 student per unit. And that's up very much. So we've seen a shift from single family to multi-family housing over the last 2 years.
Thank you very much. Bill?
Yeah, Jeff, I have a question. Bobby won't be able to answer this one either, but do we have any idea how many new constructions we lose by having a 25% discount rate versus so many cities that are zero over to 50%?
I don't think you could determine that number. No, I don't think we could calculate that. We could do a survey, I suppose, of builders. Totally anecdotally, the two things I hear most from builders working in town here are fees and the school district. Those are the two things. They're concerned about the schools, and they're concerned about fees. And I know the school district's working very, very hard on the educational metrics, if you will, and bringing that up to speed. We're trying to counter that and work on the fee side. That's where we have some control. In general, the one builder that does most of the work here, he's a single-family guy, done a substantial amount of construction. His general comment is your fees are just way out of line. Housing Hope, when they came into town, how many lots are they pulling down? 40 some over the next couple of years. They came to ask council for a waiver, a mitigation fees. So Housing Hope is building sweat equity in first-time homeowner-type housing. That would indicate to me that in order for those folks to get into a new home, the mitigation fees are a deterrent to them qualifying for those new homes. So it's more of a feeling that if a builder had the opportunity to had $1,500 cushion and he could sell that house in Snohomish and put a stainless steel refrigerator in it and sell it over here with laminate countertops and a white refrigerator in it, that would be the difference. The builder just isn't going to offer the same quality or perhaps as much quality in the home to hit that price point in the market.
So the attraction to build in the road would be less than that?
Less than that.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Dave?
The building you referred to, Jeff, is that keeping him from coming back to town and doing more homes?
In this case, no. He's a local builder. He's done a lot of construction in Monroe, and he knows our systems very, very well. And truth be told, I think the reason he's continuing to build here is because the permit process has improved so dramatically over the last couple of years, and the intake process, and he's finding it very, very easy to work with the City of Monroe when it comes to entitling the unit for construction.
Good. Thank you.
Jeff?
The calculation I did is that the impact fees, as I understand them, I don't know exactly what they are, it adds about $100 to $150, depending on what assumptions you make, to someone's mortgage. And that's where the rubber meets the road with impact fees. I think it has an effect on the school district, and water and sewer, you know, capital facilities. But the average person who moves into this town has to write a check for $100, $125 more per month because of these fees. Give or take.
I just want, I guess I, in my mind, I got to get one thing clear. Of these impact fees, is this per unit that is built?
Correct.
It is. Okay. Dan?
The action coming up on the 15th, three parts, four parts, I think it was four parts. Is it going to be?
Three for you, one for the council. Setting the fees resolution, which is.
I thought you said a few minutes ago that we would be commenting on that.
Commenting on the ordinance, which basically sets them in, is just make it convenient to add it to the fees resolution. So it's whatever's in the ordinance will be transferred to the fees resolution.
Procedurally, would it make sense for that to be broken out? I mean, I can see where the commissioner may say yes on one, yes on two, and yes on three, and I'd rather see it stay at 25% discount on four. And might choose to vote no on the whole thing.
It's going to be separate, yeah, because it was separate. One is to decouple,
okay,
which doesn't necessarily change the discount rate. Number two, which is the adoption of the capital facilities plan, doesn't change the rate. Number three, which is really the one that changes the rate, is adoption of the amendments to Chapter 20.07 of the Monroe Municipal Code, which says we will use X number percent discount of the fee calculated by the really long formula.
Okay, thanks.
Commissioners, usually in our workshops we allow comments or questions from citizens in the audience. Anybody have any objection to that? Is there anyone else in the audience wishing to make comments on this at this time? Ma'am, if you could.
Where should I go? Just right here?
Yeah, I think we can. Can we pick her up? Yeah, if you could just give us your name and address for the record, that would be great.
Deborah Collard. The address is 12507 263rd Avenue Southeast, Monroe. And I have some documents, and some of the documents you also have, it's in the Monroe School District Capital Facility Plan. On page 32 in particular, I don't know if you guys have this document. It does show the history of what mitigation fees have been in the City of Monroe. And in the year 2000, they were at $42.15. Currently, they're at $29.76, and this is for a single-family dwelling. And they'll be dropping down to $19.84, which is half. So I just want to make sure that you guys review that and look at that history so you do understand the impact that this will be to our school district, because this money does help build portables. It has purchased land. I know some of the latest purchases was Hidden River just had new portables, probably about $800,000. Not all of it came from the city, but some of it came from the county. They've put portables at our high school. They've purchased land at our own. So these mitigation fees are important. Without the mitigation fees, the school district is forced to go back to the taxpayers and ask the taxpayers for this money, which then will be more money in taxes to the public. One of the concerns I have is I looked at my own taxes. I couldn't find my 2012 taxes, but I looked at my 2011 taxes. And I compared that to what I paid in 2000. This is a total tax. My tax from Monroe School District had increased by 87%. But yet, the mitigation fees are going to be dropped in half. And so I guess I'm just wanting you guys to evaluate that and really consider the impact. And the fact that, you know, without this $992 for single-family dwelling, that's going to impact back onto the taxpayers and increase our taxes more. Now, I hear Mr. Sachs is saying this, is that the tax base will increase. But I've actually done the numbers, and if you put in a $200,000 home, a new home coming in, that would have been a single-family unit. That $992 that the district isn't going to be getting now, they're saying that it's going to be picked up by the other taxes and increase the tax base. But if you add a $200,000 to the Monroe School District tax base, it only changes the taxes by pennies. The total taxes are just, I mean, they're paying like $1,072 for a $200,000 home. And it will just change their taxes for an entire year by 5 cents. It's nothing. So I want you to understand what the real impact when you hear it's going to lower everybody's taxes, what kind of dollars we're really talking. So, and the other thing is, Commissioner Sherwood, you asked how much money is in the Monroe School District budget right now for, or in their kitty for mitigation. And it shows they have $437,000 of the city mitigation left over and about $10,000 from the county. So I'll leave this document here. I know the school district posted a lot of documents on their September 10th board docs, which is where they keep their information. And those are some good information. I hope that they will be presented to you, but I know this document will make it in there.
Great. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Brad, I guess. Oh, you have a ma'am. I'm sorry.
Hi.
Forgive me. Can you just give us your name and address for the record?
Yeah, definitely. 13624 Chainlink Road, Monroe.
Thank you.
I just think it's a bad idea to be using these school mitigation fees, and I really appreciated the data, the raw data that Deborah just provided, because we don't often hear enough about that, and we just hear little anecdotal bits and pieces from Jeff Sachs or some other planner saying that this is a good thing for us. But anyway, it's really good to hear some actual well thought out figures being presented. We've heard the usual stories. I've heard the usual stories about how we have to be competitive with other cities and how we need to offer incentives to builders to help with the economic development. I've heard Jeff Sachs tell the council, and tonight I heard him again tell you that there's a lot shortage in Monroe, and that Monroe's fees are higher than everybody else's. I've read the letter from the Master Builders Association where they point out that Snohomish has much lower fees. To that I say, who cares what Snohomish fees are? I mean, why should Monroe be forced to lower our fees just because Snohomish may have lowered theirs? And why should Monroe be penalized because some other jurisdiction lowers theirs? I just don't ever see the logic in that. And what I would like to say is a show of the data. I mean, I don't want to, you know, I would like to hear some or see some actual cold hard facts. I'd like to see verifiable sources. I'd like to see proof that we're short on building lots. There's been over 50 acres of land up on Chain Lake Road area, zoned R4, that is recently sold. And then I heard Jeff Sack saying that there's 200, or maybe it was Rad, saying that there was 260 lots in process right now. And it seems to me that with over 50 acres, that's not counting the new Roosevelt Road area annexation, and that should go through, there's even more. I would like to see proof that encouraging residential growth is going to end up not end up costing the residents, the existing residents, more money through increased water and sewer rates, property taxes. Residential growth does not pay for itself. It always ends up costing the existing residents more. So I would like you to show us in real, you know, proof how taking money away from the school district is a good thing. But it's not just the school impact fee issue that's really bothering me tonight. It's that their comprehensive plan, which is supposed to be the heart and soul of our community, it tells us where we've been, where we are now, and where we're going. And I see these, and it's unfortunate that the actual red line documents aren't available for the public to kind of thumb through tonight, but I saw them online. But you're taking out the history of how the, like the 2008 council, they actually did in their document, they said why they wanted to have the 25% instead of the 50% discount. And you guys are wanting to line that out, get rid of it, hide that from the public. I just think that's wrong. I think that we need to see this decision-making process in our comprehensive plan. We need to see the thought process that went on before. The proposal before you edits out past history, and it really looks like somebody, whoever wrote this, doesn't want the public to know that at one time we had a city council that cared enough about the community, including educating of our kids, to require the developers to pay more of their fair share. And I'd like to ask one final question. That would be, I don't expect an answer, but I'd sure like to ask the question anyway. Where did this plan originate? Who's behind it? It had to start somewhere. I'd really like to know exactly why this is such a big emergency. Thank you.
Thank you. You can just give us your name and address for the record, please.
Hi. My name is Erin. My last name is Angus Snapka. And I live on Lewis Street, just right down the road, as a matter of fact. I just had two brief comments. First, I thought it was interesting listening to Mr. Sachs talk about conversations with the developers. I mean, right down to what sort of refrigerator they could install, but it just doesn't seem like a lot of conversation has taken place between the city and the school district on this, and it really seems like the school district is kind of caught off guard here. And it's true, you know, maybe it is true, maybe it isn't true, that a homeowner, you know, might have to pay an extra $500 or $1,000 for the home in Monroe, or they might have to do without a stainless steel refrigerator. But I know my husband and I, the two times that we were in the market for a home, you know, we sure looked at what the taxes were and what we expected to pay in school taxes. I mean, if you go on realtor.com, you know, it's right there on the front page, you know, what comparable homes pay in school taxes. You know, I mean, it's like people aren't stupid. They'll do their homework. No, our school taxes are a lot higher than surrounding neighbors. That's all. Just
thank you.
Vicki Mullen, 10312 210th Street Southeast, Snohomish, Washington, 98290, home number 296. It's changed over the years. Anyway, a couple of different things. I've been mostly concerned with some of the things that have already been said. But the process, I'm trying to get a handle on the process, on how the Planning Commission is working on this, the various public hearings, how it's going forward with the City Council. It seems rushed to me. It's way different process than I have been used to, so I'm trying to get a new, you know, on this. It seems to me that the website. I've been trying to rely on the city's website for documentation so that I could have a clear understanding of what was going on, what you'd be discussing tonight. The agenda has changed from last Friday's afternoon to today to add this workshop aspect to it. The documentation, the Planning Commission was supposed to have a five-page PDF, which was listed as, you know, and I went through everything, so I would be up to speed to what you guys would be looking at. And that then changed. I found another document that was a seven-page PDF that was redlined, that was different from the document that you guys had had. I sent copies to the council. I sent copies to the school district, and yet there was no way to really contact any of you. I put it on your Facebook pages in hopes that you might see it on some of yours. And then the next thing that comes out is today, like 2 hours before this meeting, comes out the 16-page redline ordinance, and a new agenda. And so my concern is process and how this goes on and how, where these dates are and why such a rush for all this. I am totally against things coming out of the comp plan and being put into the legislative arena. I think that the comp plan was done in the past because Monroe has such a history of problems once they put things in the legislative, of getting it changed too quickly. I like things to be in the comp plan because people can rely on what's going to be charged. The school district, as it was said, this puts it back into the legislative arena, which can charge 100% of mitigation or zero of mitigation. And I see that, you know, they're already looking at going to 50% mitigation, so I can't think that they're going to want to jump to 100%. My personal opinion is 100% is a correct fee. I will be asking Snohomish County to up their fee from 50 to 75%. I can see the fact that 100% might put an unfair burden, but I don't think 75% is an unfair burden on new home construction. You're realizing that this is mitigation, with the 100% being the cost that is determined that a student would be bringing to your community. I mean, the actual cost is 100%. You're talking a discount off that, not, you know, so you're saying now, with this Monroe saying 75%, I think that seems like a fair amount. The person, the new construction, that child's 75%. I think the county should be at 75%. I don't see why other school districts aren't, unless, as you say, they're passing bonds and they don't have a need for this. But the Monroe School District, in my experience, does have a need. They have, during their levy time, they talked about they have a large, they need more, you know, capital facilities money. So I don't think that this should be changed at this time. And I really am concerned about taking it out. I don't think things like this should come out of the comp plan, because I think if it's in the comp plan, it makes it's harder to be changed, true, but that makes it more available to the public to have a longer process, and it also makes it easier for the school district to be able to kind of know where they're going. If it goes into the legislative body, it can be changed it annually or more than annually. That doesn't, I don't think it gives them a good, it's not a good opportunity. And then on in regards to this whole process, one of my, and as I've stated, you know, I know the comprehensive plans, you're supposed to have public participation, early public participation, and I know you're offering that, and you will be having some deadlines, but all these deadlines are just coming right on top of one another for all this public hearing, these workshops. And then I also, the information that's being put into our local papers is wrong based on what the city has told them. Our current Monroe Monitor says that this won't be discussed until next year. So all of the people in the city, if they're reading the newspaper, they are being told something, you know, that's not right now, and everything's been speeded up. And I have an email from Polly Carey, who's the monitor and the editor of the Monitor, and I asked her, I said, the information you just put in the newspaper is wrong. It's not coming out next year. You know, it's happening right now. If they pull this, they can vote on it by November 6th. I believe that's correct. I mean, someone can correct me if I'm wrong. Her response back to me was, actually, I relied on information from Jim Scott and Nancy Truitt Pierce, because they understand that the changes in the comp plan was necessary to charge mitigation fees and requires docketing. But I later found out from Jeff Sachs that the city is trying two avenues. One is to address it now and get the planning commission to work on it right away. That's a period after that. And then it says, if the city finds out in the meantime that it's not legal, they will also docket it for discussion for next year. There will be another story next week. So my question on this is, Jeff Sachs, what do you mean by if it's legal? What part of this could be illegal?
Outside of the annual comprehensive plan amendment process, there are certain exemptions that are allowed for if they're handled through the budget cycle and the capital facilities plan. At the time when Paulie asked me the original question, I said we're on two tracks. We're asking legal counsel to advise us on both tracks. Number one, if we can't get it done through the capital facilities plan during the budget process, then we need to docket it and put it on the plan review as your agenda talks about tonight. What we've discovered in the last week or so is, and Paula didn't know the answer to this question until yesterday when she called me at home and asked me the question, is legal counsel says we can do this through the exemption during the budget process when we adopt our capital facilities plan during our 2013 budget deliberations. So legal, illegal is a bit strong. Appropriate or not appropriate is probably more adequate. We would not have moved forward if we didn't clearly see that we can accomplish this legislatively and not violate the Mineral Municipal Code. So that's the answer to that.
Thank you. Brad?
Okay. Next item is the North Kelsey Design Guidelines. As we say, the 2012 comprehensive plan process removed the North Kelsey Design Guidelines from the comprehensive plan, as they were adopted both in the comprehensive plan and by the Mineral Municipal Code. And as we told you at that time, there would be some changes being made to the design guidelines to more accurately reflect what is happening up in North Kelsey. And here's the first version of the plan. And I'm assuming you have a red line copy there. Yes, you do. Red line copy and a other copy, which I think is without the red lines. Or maybe the original. What changes are we recommended to reflect what is actually happening up at that site? With the Walmart proposal coming in the next core underway and the Lowe's, how the uses have changed and what changes are needed for that to reflect that. Basically, the architectural design guidelines have remained. The references to the focal points, focal plazas, village greens, and things like that have been removed. And the things that relate to how the pedestrian walk frontage of buildings, instead of developing that way, it's more traditional parking lot in front of the building. So those kind of things have been removed. And then I also noticed that the sign portion has been removed, which is being addressed by the sign code amendments that are coming to the Planning Commission, you know when?
October.
So this is happening slightly before that. The plan is to have a public hearing of this also with the Planning Commission, and then the Planning Commission to make a recommendation to the City Council at the October 22nd meeting.
Thank you. Commissioners, any questions or comments on this at this time?
King Stewart, right here. So October 15th for public hearing.
Yes.
That's 2.5 weeks, 3 weeks from now?
Mm-hmm.
3 weeks? 3 weeks? This is obviously a working process.
Mm-hmm.
I know that just in my first read through it, I've got a number of questions. I'm probably not alone, I have some questions. How are we going to approach it?
As fire away.
Fire away.
I got a quick question before you start because it relates to that. Is there going to be any other workshops before this public hearing?
You're not having any other meetings.
That's what I thought. I was thought I would check on that.
So,
excellent.
Point of reference, thank you.
So, Dave, you want to start with your...
Sure.
Great.
I can start on page 26 of the redline version.
Okay.
Under E, review process, it says the following guidelines will be used along with other city ordinances and regulations for the city's review of development proposals. And then there are no guidelines that I can find. Unless it's talking about the subsequent chapters.
Yes. I mean, that's not a change from what it was before. So,
okay, so maybe it's wordsmithing.
No gaps.
It kind of left me hanging when I read it.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of thought, well, there's these bullet points here to talk about what these components would be.
The following chapters.
On page 27, mm-hmm. and again, maybe just tweaking, the development, at the top of the page, development must be. The development must city address the following principles, code.
Okay, city needs to be.
And then it goes on to say that development shall indicate how the proposal will connect. It just, it's not making sense
yeah. to me.
Maybe it's an initial slash at it.
B.
And
this was originally written as First Western was going to come in with a binding site plan and say, here, we're going to build all the buildings mm-hmm. and everything. So, it doesn't appear to be doing that way, so that's why we're trying to get away from the binding site plan and more binding site plans, because it's probably going to be individual buildings that are going to be coming in. So that's the purpose of that. And as you erase things, sometimes you miss erasing words or erase one too many, things like that. So that's... Yeah, I got it back over here several times.
Okay. The parking talks about the reduction to 250 square feet.
Okay.
I'm sorry, page 43.
Yeah.
What's the current city requirement for parking for retail space?
1 to 200.
So actually that's an increase then?
No, that is it's a decrease. Less, you know. Yeah. 4 per 1,000 versus 5 per 1,000.
What's the most bill out
there? 250.
250.
Yeah.
Okay. And we don't, have we done that anywhere else in the city?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay. Do we seem to be the retail that we have that's been developed at the 1 to 200? And Jeff probably can comment on this quite adequately from his perspective. Is that an overabundance of parking for retail, of the sort that we're envisioning here?
Yes. I mean, if you, from my observations, both the Lowe's parking lot and Fred Meyer's parking lot, you know, except for, you know, Christmas Eve or the day before Thanksgiving at Fred Meyer, there's, you know, plenty of parking that's empty most of the time.
When Lowe's built above and beyond what they had to build, didn't they, as part of the agreement with the city?
The triangular piece south of the east-west walkway is not Lowe's parking, it's parking for the remaining property. But even not counting that, the field that is Lowe's appears to me to be quite empty at times.
Okay. Jeff, did you want to?
There's no doubt in observing most retail throughout the Puget Sound area that almost every building I've ever appraised or looked at as a comparable or a comparable rental, comparable sale, has way more parking than they need. I don't know where it came from, but it's overdone. And it's a waste of land and reduces the amount of building that can be built. And it also causes issues with storm drainage because you have more impervious surface. There's a lot of, you know, tangents to this, but generally in Monroe, for sure, everything I've seen, with very few exceptions, is overparked. Except for Denny's. Which I appraised, and I knew it was going to be on the park. So I set them up with a lease with Burlington Northern so they could get a few spaces out of Roger Starbuck.
Thank you. Appreciate that, Chuck. On page 45, I think this is just a statement, that your 2C, Chain Lake Road and mid-block entry between North Kelsey Street and Chain Lake Road. Shouldn't that say Chain Lake Road? Or rather, Chain Lake Road doesn't go between North Kelsey Street and Chain Lake Road.
It'd be Chain Lake Road between... Actually, it's Turney Place, isn't it? No. Okay. Chain Lake Road between North Kelsey and Turney. But that was existing language.
Yeah. I want to jump in real quick, if I may, on the parking. Mm-hmm. We don't have any different level of parking for restaurants.
Yes, restaurants is one space for four seats.
Thank you. Okay. And is that... Yeah, in this particular...
No, basically, it's only retail that changes in the guidelines. Everything else is based on Chapter 18.86 of the Monroe Municipal Code.
Great, thank you.
Back to page 49, right at bottom 6, again, just a statement that needs to be reread, I think, and addressed. Pathways that provide key access to the or other key sites are chosen primary pathways. I'm not sure what we're talking about.
Okay.
In looking at page 52, we talk about architectural concept under the guidelines. The first bullet point of the one. At first glance, it struck me that we need to look further into the statement pedestrian interest, comfort, and connections throughout the area. I'm not sure that's just making sense. And so I hope that by the time we get to public hearing at our next meeting, we've got a document that is cleaner than what we have here now. And that's really what I'm trying to help get toward. Mm-hmm. Do you see my question there, Brad?
Yeah, but I think if you go up to the Coleman before that, it's specifically designed a specific building should address pedestrian interest, comfort, and connections throughout the area.
So, pedestrian interest and comfort. Put the end back in.
Well, there's a comma there. Should be comma. Pedestrian interest, comma, comfort, comma, and connections.
That's all I have at this point. Thank you.
Thank you, Dave. Comments or questions on this document? Seeing no hands, again, we often open up for the audience to make comments regarding these documents, even though it is just a workshop. Is there anyone in the audience wishing to make a comment here? There will again be a public hearing, of course. On the 15th, I believe it is. Brad, for our public hearing on this?
15th, October, yes.
Seeing no hands in the audience, I guess we will move on.
Go ahead. If there's no comments from the audience. In the cover sheet, the timing of this is going to come October 15th. When would you expect this would in itself be done? As far as the newly revised development plan adopted by council?
The process completed?
Yes, on this aspect.
It would be November 6th, I think.
The signed code is coming back to us next month. How long are we going to spend on that?
We're trying to get it done before the end of the year.
Okay. And I guess what I'm getting at, we're going to have a period of time here where we have no sign regulations at all as they relate to this area.
We could also write the ordinance in such a way that the sign code, the sign guidance contained in the design guideline sunsets upon adoption of new code, so that you're not in a time of, you know, free-for-all signs. So
free-for-all signs.
You don't
have to write up the big sign.
That's right.
Yeah.
It's just a thought.
And it's a good idea. Yeah. So we'll talk with Paul and the consultant about that. The timeline for the sign code is not so much geared towards the end of the year. It's geared towards you guys' schedule and when your meetings are going to be taking place. So, and it's probably this, the changes are worthy of discussion. So I think the sunset idea might be the appropriate response.
Good. Thank you.
Any other comments or questions?
Thank you, Brad.
Mm-hmm. I think we're moving on to discussion by commissioners and staff. Brad, anything?
No.
Thank you. Jeff, any general from the world pearls? Thank you. Bridget?
No, thank you.
Jeff, I was wondering if the more has been done on Lake Park Cabin. I was talking about building an RV park cabin late out here.
The cabin is still working with Department of Natural Resources.
Okay.
On their final mitigation plan. Once a reclamation plan is the correct term. Once their reclamation plan is approved by DNR, then we'll start the process of transferring title. They'll start the construction of the reclamation, get it all laid out. But the city did submit some general drawings or schematics of a big cartoon of what the park would look like. Paul Kukalka did a cartoon and submitted that to cabinet to include the reclamation plan.
The city of Oak Harbor has a park similar on the right of the water. And this park with the RV, you've got ball fields and everything else there too. But the park, it's the RV park, is outpaced from the whole far park system in the whole town of Oak Harbor, just in the RV. Hmm. And it was at that time was a $10 fee.
How many units did they have?
They expanded. I think they had about 70. They expanded. They had a small one, then they expanded one corner out, making it make it larger. And it's very impressive. It was a what they call it, they had a dump station. Not a full of dumps. They just had power, water, and a dump station. And the a box there with the metal box with a put your card out, stick it on the post, and an honor system. And the police department would come by and empty the box out once a night. It worked out pretty well.
Mike Farrell has modeled some of this. There's a park down in Auburn that's similar to what they've kind of used that schematic. I think it's more limited. It's 15 to 30 stalls, perhaps, and then also a camping area for tent camping.
Yeah. Be nice.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Anything? Phil?
Nothing.
Jeff?
No.
Dave?
Just to follow up on Wayne's question with regard to cabin, would such a use require any changes to our comp plan? Should that be included in our list of tasks?
Most of the concerns, I think, would have to do with shoreline jurisdictional issues.
Which is a permitting process.
Correct. but I don't know if we have to amend the Parks Capital Facilities Plan. Doesn't, I think it has a very broad brush description of the eventual project down there, but no clear, concise development plans. So I think that will probably be amended as time goes along. That might be where the adventure money goes. Not the adventure park, but adventure money.
And just to add on to that, the shoreline master program allows recreational uses in urban conservancy mining. So that would cover, yeah, that's shoreline designated urban conservancy mining, and recreational uses are allowed.
My question would be whether we define recreational uses as allowing camping facilities.
Yes, it's broad enough.
Is it?
Yeah.
That's all. Thank you.
Thank you, Dave. I don't have anything. So with that, I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second. Motion made by Commissioner Schulz, seconded by Commissioner Demarest. We do have a comment.
I can't remember when we meet on the 8th. It's next month. It's the 15th and the 22nd.
Thank you. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you.